except in terms of the outcome below. Your Honors, I'd like to explain, if I could, a couple of documents that I think will let you understand the facts quickly and let us get to the legal issues presented here. The first document, and I don't know how to manipulate this item to get a little better view, but I think it's okay there. I'll leave it. I think that's okay. I should have asked you before we started. Okay. Now that'll give me size. That'll help. Thank you very much. This document is the label of the Guardsman Max herbicide product involved in this case. And that product is not claimed to have been defective. So Ohio and the National Crane and Hilt, which you just heard about, are not an issue in terms of a product claim in this case. The label is very much central to the issues. The label says that the application rate of this herbicide is determined in significant measure by the soil texture. If the soil is coarse, less herbicide is to be applied. In this case, coarse soils were involved. We know that from the defendant's documents, which expressly describe the soil textures as coarse. The theory of this case, the claim in the case, is an injury to crop on 16 fields. The theory of the case, the primary theory, was negligence. We contend that CBA applied an excessive rate of chemical because the soils were predominantly coarse. A second theory pled was breach of warranty. Before trial, a motion for summary judgment was made, and the trial court issued an order. It clarified that order when counsel for both sides submitted jury instructions. The plaintiff submitted negligence instructions. The defense submitted instructions under breach of implied warranty. The trial court clarified, saying, "I intended to dismiss only the negligence theory," which brings us to our first assignment of error. The first error we contend that was made by the trial court here when summary judgment was granted on the negligence theory. Section 251330 of the statutes, in the very first sentence of our sequence of statutes on summary judgment, permits summary judgment to be entered on claims, but not on theories. That became a particularly acute problem here because at the instant when the trial court decided that we could not proceed on our negligence theory, we were left only with a warranty theory. And by that stage in the case, we no longer made any claim that the product was defective.
But if the court determines that a particular alternative legal theory is a matter of law not viable, why, what prevents it from entering a partial summary judgment as to that theory?
Well, I think, Your Honor, the answer to that is that our statutes permit the court to decide facts that negate proceeding on that theory. I think that the trial court can conclude that that theory of law is one that doesn't apply to the case and dismiss it now under Rule 12. But I don't think the summary judgment statutes, even if only by legislative accident or mistake, don't reach it. Most of the time, a partial summary judgment that clarifies the issues that way is helpful to both sides and to this court. In this case, the problem, I think, is acute because it put us in a position where essentially what we were confronted with was 3 days of trial, knowing we had to have a directed verdict coming because we couldn't make the elements of proof on a warranty theory. We didn't contend the product was defective.
Was the measure of damages the same under your negligence and warranty theories?
Yes. And I think that led the trial court to conclude that a way to get what maybe the trial judge recognized by then had been a mistake on the decision on negligence, to get the matter before you whole. And so the trial court decided you didn't prove your damages with enough specificity. I take it from those questions I perhaps said enough about the negligence theory, so I'm going to move to the proof of damages. Your Honors, the evidence of damages in this case was about as extensive as a farmer's proof of a loss on a corn crop can be. We had everything from the cropping plan to the planting records to the weather records, including temperature and rainfall. We had the irrigation records. We had the crop report scouting records, if you will. We had all of the harvest records, and the harvest records are, at least to a farm kid, fascinating documents, because they include now these maps made by a computer in the combine during harvest, foot by foot as you go across the field. The maps describe with a legend at the top what the yield is in each and every part of the field down to, and again, fascinating to a farm kid, less yield at the end where you turn and have end rows. Now, my client, when asked about the accuracy of these maps on cross-examination, said not perfect, plus or minus maybe even as much as 10%. If we had only those maps, we had an issue about whether our proof was specific enough.
Did you factor in expenses?
Oh, yes, we did, Your Honor. And the dispute on appeal is about two specific expenses, and they are the cost of drying and the cost of hauling. And our client testified the cost of drying was approximately 2 cents a bushel and the cost of hauling approximately a dime. So we have evidence on that issue. So the question is, can we shrink the 10% down enough so that the trial court can't conclude without submitting the case to the jury that there's too much speculation about whether we've proved our damages with enough specificity? This is a lost profits case. And in that connection, what we proved and what the defense helped us prove with extensive cross-examination was a field-by-field discussion of whether this field or that field had a few wet acres, had some non-irrigated acres, which are differentiated out very specifically because we've also got the county assessor's records, which describe the acreages irrigated or non-irrigated by the acre, and then the differences in yields on both, and locations where we had a little bit of a crop loss because we had sunflowers or shatter cane or some weed. Field by field, 16 times over.
Excuse me, on the field by field, they're all identified as coarse without conflict?
Your Honor, no, there is a conflict in the evidence about how much of the soil in each field is coarse. And in each field, as one would expect, there is some coarse soil and some medium. And as we've discussed with some amusement of ourselves, President Jefferson laid out sections, townships, and ranges, but God made soil, and he didn't put it in sections, townships, and ranges. The predominant soil type is coarse. The requirement is that you apply the herbicide to the dominant soil type. The defense says, well, you ought to only recover for the fraction of the field that's coarse, but you can't farm it that way because the soil doesn't lie in sections, townships, and ranges.
Did the trial court in its order or in a sidebar indicate where you failed in your proof of damages?
We had an extended argument on the motion for directed verdict. Judge Owens went out, read a case, Hahn versus Weber, which was cited to him, came back in and made findings. And his record, as I recall it, notes that we did differentiate between irrigated and non-irrigated. He did not think with enough specificity. We differ with that. We think it got, we did not require mathematical certainty. And he also noted that our client admitted that we had some yield losses in some areas of fields that either were not reached with irrigation, were not irrigated as much as other fields because in one instance there was a breakdown, etc. But, Your Honor, all of those points were described in the evidence for the jury with estimates of yield loss attributable to them. So it was a matter of credibility of our witness and whether we had reached mathematical certainty or reasonable certitude.
Did anybody discuss Pribble versus Coinsen, or were any shortcomings were there?
Your Honor, there was no discussion of Pribble versus Coinsen, and that is the appellant's counsel's fault at the time of that argument. But it's clear that the concepts in that case were debated before the trial court.
What was the juror? Never mind.
We request respectfully that you reverse and on remand that we be permitted to try the negligence theory. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Adam, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Jordan Adam. I'm here this morning on behalf of the Central Valley Ag Cooperative, and I guess I'd like to start out by addressing head-on the economic loss doctrine. In this case, the Layshocks are claiming that the economic loss doctrine should not apply because they're not claiming that the Guardsman Max product is defective, and the economic loss doctrine only applies when a product is defective. Under Nebraska law, as well as under the Restatement Third of Torts, Section 2, a product may be defective in one of three ways. It can be defective in design, it can be defective in manufacture, and it also can be defective with labeling instructions. That is, inappropriate labeling instructions or insufficient warnings. In this case, the Layshocks are claiming that the maximum amount of Guardsman Max that should have been applied on their crops was 3 pints per acre of Guardsman Max. Central Valley Ag contends that 4 pints per acre was a recommended and approved label rate to apply on there. At the summary judgment hearing, where this was determined, whether or not the economic loss doctrine applied or not, there was evidence that was submitted. One of those pieces of evidence was the answers to interrogatories by Central Valley Ag, Exhibit 26. In that, in those interrogatory answers, our expert, Randy Brown, said that 4 pints per acre was appropriate on the Layshocks cornfields. There is also a letter from the technical marketing director from BASF, who manufactures Guardsman Max, who said that the recommended rate, 4 pints per acre, was appropriate in the type of soils that exist on the Layshocks cornfields.
But doesn't that go to the question of whether the applicator was justified in departing from the label? It doesn't go to any defect in the product, does it?
Well, my point in bringing all that up is that at the premise, the baseline of this case is that there is a labeling problem. There's a labeling issue. There is two interpretations of that label. There is an ambiguity. On the one hand, Central Valley Ag is acknowledging that 4 pints is allowed under the label. The Layshocks are saying only 3 pints. We're looking at the language of the label, and it only recommends 3 pints.
But that's not a product claim, is it?
Well, I think it is. A product liability action is any time that there is property damage because of a manufacturing defect or improper instructions or a label that has insufficient warnings. That's still a product liability action.
The plaintiff isn't... Go ahead. The plaintiff's not claiming that the label was defective. It's claiming the reader is.
Well, I think
that's a negligence issue.
Well, I think that what the premise, the idea underneath that, is that there is an ambiguity in this label. There is insufficient warnings on the label. There should have been stronger labels. I think that is the heart of this matter.
You may be claiming that, but the plaintiff is. And isn't that what determines the nature of the claim?
What the plaintiff? Yes, I agree with that, Your Honor. Yes, it is. I think that what we're talking about is they are claiming that there wasn't a strong enough warning on there, and because of that, this product was not safe for use.
No, they're claiming that you didn't apply it in the way that the label said to apply it, and you were therefore, they contend, negligent. Why isn't that a negligence case?
Well, I think that, again, I have to come back to the label on that. They're saying it's I think that the primary purpose of this transaction is the sale of goods. And I think that the economic loss doctrine steps in and treats us like a warranty case.
Did you have a case over against the manufacturer?
I'm sorry.
Did you bring in a manufacturer that made a label that you think has some issues?
No, the manufacturer was not brought in on this case. I suspect the manufacturer was not brought in because the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act would have preempted those claims against the manufacturer. So the manufacturer was not brought in. I do want to bring up one additional point with the sale of goods service contract dichotomy. In this case, the parties do not dispute that there was a mixed transaction. That is, Central Valley Ag sold a product to the Layshocks and then performed a service, that is, spraying the product onto the crops. The Layshocks in this case, however, are taking inconsistent positions. On the one hand, they've argued strenuously in their brief that this is a service contract in order to get a trial on their negligence claims. On the other hand, though, by asking for a new trial on their implied warranty claims, they are implicitly acknowledging that this was the primary thrust of this transaction was a sale of goods, because the implied warranty claims only arise under the UCC. So it's inconsistent for them to stand before you and argue in their brief that the court should grant a new trial on both of these claims. That cannot happen. It has to be one or the other. The fact of the matter is that this was a sale of goods transaction.
Let me back up again just to the issue. So was it your position at the trial that these claims were barred because the field's preempted?
No.
The labeling field is preempted.
That was not an affirmative defense, but it was not raised at trial. The FIFRA, a Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, Rodenticide Act, that was not raised as an actual, I mean, it was an affirmative defense, but that was not discussed about at trial, and it wasn't, the direct verdict did not throw out the claims on the basis of that statute as well. But what I was getting to on the sale of goods situation is that what we have here, and when I think that this sale of goods issue was decided, was at the summary judgment stage. That is when the court decided that the economic loss doctrine applies. Now, I would concede that the economic loss doctrine does not apply in a strictly service contract situation. Had this been a case where Central Valley Ag had not sold Garvin Max to the Layshocks and had simply gone out and sprayed their crops, then we're in a service contract setting. But here, there is a sale of goods, and there's also a service involved with that. At the summary judgment stage, the Layshocks did not offer any evidence whatsoever saying that they actually paid Central Valley Ag to spray Garvin Max on their fields. The only allegation, albeit in their complaint, was that they paid CVA, Central Valley Ag, $40,000 to actually buy the product. This court has repeatedly found that in a mixed transaction such as this, as in this case, it's a relevant factor whether or not the buyer of a product actually paid a separate price for a service incidental to a purchase. That was not proved at the summary judgment stage. I would like to, if I can, transition into our cross appeal, Central Valley Ag's cross appeal. At the summary judgment level, we moved for summary judgment on several theories. And one of them was that we moved on summary judgment because the Layshocks had failed to prove a material element of their damages. That is, in a crop loss case such as this, the plaintiff has a burden of proving in a measure of damages. What is the difference in the measure of damages, the tribal case, is the difference between the value of the crop without an injury minus the actual harvested crop minus any expenses that were saved. I move for, Central Valley Ag moved for summary judgment on that point because the Layshocks did not prove any evidence of how many expenses that they saved. Before the summary judgment hearing, I took the deposition of Tom Layshock, who is the chief plaintiff.
Well, did they prove what they alleged was the loss of yield of the number of bushels per acre? Is that alleged by the plaintiffs?
Yes, I don't think
that. Did they then establish what the drying costs would be and the hauling costs would be?
That came up at trial. But what I'm talking about, at summary judgment, the only evidence that was before the court at that time was a guess from Mr. Layshock in his deposition, which that portion of his deposition was offered at the summary judgment hearing, where I asked him about the expenses saved, which I think was 2 cents a bushel in drying, 10 cents a bushel in transportation costs saved. I asked him where he came up with those numbers. He said, I'm paraphrasing, that those were guesses. They were guesstimates. You cannot create an issue of fact for summary judgment purposes based upon a conclusion that is based upon a guess or speculation. Once I put that in issue, it was up to the Layshocks to create a genuine issue of fact. They did not do that. And I would point out to the court that what the Layshocks have done to apparently create an issue of fact is they've pointed to two very large deposition transcripts, one of them from John Teese, and another one from Dale Faraday, as well as an expert report from Dale Faraday. And what they've said is they're in there somewhere where we create an issue of fact. But the fact of the matter is, looking at those documents, at no point did any of those witnesses actually say that anything, that those costs, those expenses saved were anything but a guess. So I don't think there's an issue of fact. This case should not have gone to trial on the Garza Max claims because Layshocks failed to prove a material element of their damages.
Well, let me see if I understand it. So you move for summary judgment, is that right?
That's correct.
And you, with respect to the damage issue, you point to Mr. Layshock's testimony, right? And so is that your position,
right,
as a matter of law? there's no damages or there's insufficient proof of damages.
Yeah. I'm saying...
And then the burden would shift.
Exactly. The burden would shift to actually create an issue of fact. You cannot create an issue of fact based upon a guess. When he's guessing on his damages, what actually his expenses
were. But I think the first question was as a matter of law.
Right. Correct.
Right.
So yes.
As a matter of law, you establish what with respect to damages? With respect to damages, as a matter of law, what did you prove?
Well, what we proved was that it was a guess. That's what we proved. I mean, he put in issue that this is how much money, this is what the actual value...
But counsel, this was at the discovery stage, was it not?
Right, right. Yes.
I mean, are you claiming that they would not be able to prove, as a matter of law, damages at trial?
Yes, that is correct, yes. They couldn't prove the net amount of their damages because
they did.
On the expense of sale. Well, I think that it was a guess, though. I think that they showed...
If the normal yield was 200 bushels an acre, and after this chemical was applied, that the yield to each acre was 150, you would have some evidence there of damages that you'd lost 50 bushels an acre. And then you would factor in what that extra cost would be as far as expenses of hauling and drying, but that would give you your net loss of income based upon the allegation of wrongful application of the herbicide. Didn't they prove that?
I think that they put in evidence of that, but again, I come down that they had their net. I think why that we have a situation where why we have the expenses saved is that you don't...
Why do you bring a summary judgment on a claim for expenses saved before trial when you haven't established the first point how much loss you've had in your yield? I mean, saving expenses by losing money is not really an element that's for summary judgment, is it?
Well, I think that's part of their... Part of their damage, they have to make out a prima facie case, is a duty breach and causation and damages. I think, yes, they proved those first three, duty breach, causation, but damages, I think they proved their net amount. They didn't make a prima facie case on actually, they did prove that here was our losses from your product, but a part of that element in the damages is also how much money did you save in not having to produce the crop that you lost because of the product.
It's what would have been your expenses if you had produced greater yields, not what you saved, but what would have been your net profit.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, 33 seconds.
You've got 33 seconds, Mr. Dominant.
Rebuttal later, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments for the day. You are dismissed.